All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers, what the fuck buddies, what the fucking ears, what the fucksters? I'm Mark Maron. This is WTF. Welcome to the show. This is my podcast. I'm sitting in my garage where I've done pretty much for 700 episodes. This is the 700th episode of WTF. I can't fucking believe it. Can you? It's pretty insane. It's like, what's weird is that I think about the life of the show. I think about my life. I think about where it started and where it came from. I know there's plenty of other product out there, content, things that happen daily that don't go celebrated necessarily, like these landmarks in my podcast history, in the history of this show, of me. But it's pretty insane. It's pretty unbelievable, and I'm pretty humbled and grateful by all of it. And today is a very special episode, although the people who were on today's show had no idea it was a 700th episode. This is the first sort of 100th marker that we didn't necessarily make a big deal out of, because we do the show. We like to do the show. I'm talking we. My producer and business partner, Brendan McDonald, who is equally as responsible for this show. We do it because it's something we love to do. It's become a beautiful job, and it's become very important to many of you. So we didn't create a special show per se. What we did here today is I talked to two people. Again, neither of them knew it was a 700th episode until I told them. My first guest on part one, there are two parts today. There are two separate podcasts, two parts. Part one is Julia Louis-Dreyfus, who I've been dying to talk to for a long time. I'm a huge fan of hers. I think she's hilarious. I was nervous about it because I think she's one of the greatest comic actors, period, who has ever lived. And I've always been sort of enchanted by her. And I didn't think she ever wanted to do the show. So it was very exciting for me to talk to her. And the second part of the 700th WTF is Louis C.K. Louis was in town. And I got to tell you, he was just, excited to finally talk about the process of creating and making Horace and Pete, which I watched all 10 episodes of. And I got to say, it's really something. It's a real masterpiece. It's a real undertaking, a real creative. It's just mind blowing that he pulled it off and that he honored himself so beautifully and so precisely and so differently than usual. So that's part two that you will have to download separately. It's another podcast, but there are two parts of our 700th episode. But I think I need to catch you up on my life a little bit first, and then I'll share some more of my feelings. Jury duty. Went down there, was ready to serve. It was a superior court. I was nervous, but I knew I had to go down there, and I thought that, I would try to get out of it and, say that I have an anger problem, or, it's weird about jury duty is that when you get there and you go through the process and then you get chosen to be selected and you go into that courtroom, you're not so confident anymore. It's tough being a bullshit artist. I imagine if you had to, if you're a lawyer or a defendant that is trying to hide his guilt, I imagine the survival instinct and the need to win would make you a tremendous bullshit artist. But just as a guy that was there to do his civic duty and willing to do it, I realized that, I should do this, and I kind of wanted to do it, and I got into that courtroom, and the woman who was the judge, I was the third juror. They explained the case. It was a medical malpractice case. They asked if you served on a jury before. I said no. I went downtown a while back, and I was not selected. And I got to be honest with you, I'm supposed to go to New York next week. I'm doing the Tonight Show. It's important for my career. I'd like to do that. And I know I've postponed before and I'd like to try to postpone again. And she said, well, I don't know if you can postpone again, but why don't you go downstairs and see if they can place you on another trial, a shorter trial. And I'm like, okay, thank you, Your Honor. And they let me go, time served, jury served. And I felt like I weaseled out of something that I should do. And I'm not telling every court in California that I'm openly available, but I will put aside more time next time for the Superior Court. But I got out of it. So there's closure on that for those of you who are thought it was some sort of cliffhanger. I was ready, but I did not get asked to serve. And quite honestly, I was relieved. And that's that. All right. Okay, look. 700 episodes, and why we didn't make a big deal out of it. It is a big deal. It's a big deal to me. But as I was saying before, as far as, you know, our intentions for this show, I wanted all these conversations to be vital anytime you listen to them. I went out of my way to not tether them to current events or to talk about current events. Some of you may think I'm self-indulgent, but it was my decision to deal with the parameters of my life and my feelings and my emotions and where I am in the world, primarily to have that as part of the narrative of the show, but also to sort of make these shows available and relevant at any time that you listen to them. And I'm very proud of the fact that Brendan and I were able to put together 700 episodes, 700 unique episodes, some of them live, some of them not done here in the garage, that will really... They're not time capsules. They're not dated. They may be time capsules in the sense of people's careers. Many of the people that I've talked to have gone on to bigger things. Many of them have passed away, sadly. Some of them have gone on to different lives. But these episodes are portraits in time. And that was always the intention. So, like, let's say you get the Howl.fm. If you go to Howl.fm and get that app for the archives, you can really dip into anywhere you want and pick these episodes with people that interest you and you know, see them at that point in their career and most of the time get a good sense of who they are emotionally and who they are as people. And I have a profound interest in that. I can't begin to tell you how important it is for me to have these conversations, even 700 in. Like, if I don't have a talk in here a couple a week, you know, I get squirrely. I don't know, you know, who I am in the world or where I stand. I need it helps me to be selfless and also to be there for somebody else. I'm not always great at that in my real life, but here in the garage, you know, I open myself up and I make myself available for somebody else. And I really listen and get moved by their stories, no matter, you know, where they go or what happens. And I don't always know where they're going to go. Most of the time I don't. And I don't know what's going to happen. So it's always thrilling for me. You know, what I want to say is thank you. Because I had no idea really where this would go or where it would lead. And the fact that these conversations I have with people in this garage have found a place in your lives and mean something that I could never have imagined to your life, whatever it may be, however you engage with this show, whatever your expectations are, the amount of feedback I get from you about, you know, how it makes you feel or what problems it brought up in you and helped you with resolution or feeling less alone or whatever it is. However you're comforted or entertained by this, I had no idea that that would happen. I had no idea that this show would have the life it's had. And really, in terms of this landmark of 700 episodes, and these two guests specifically, who are some of the greatest comedy stars that this country has produced, Julia Louis-Dreyfus and Louis C.K. That was a coincidence. I really didn't anticipate the Louis talk to begin with, but the fact that, you know, this is a landmark in me having these conversations. We just wanted to do what we do. I told them both that it was a 700th episode, but they didn't know they were coming into it. So, but I thought I should let them know. So I hope you enjoy our two-parter here, and again, thank you for listening. I am genuinely not only grateful, but proud of this show and proud that we pulled it together out of nothing but the desire to have these conversations and the will to do them consistently and evolve as people. Who am I talking to? All of us. Who am I talking about? All of us. I don't know. Too much coffee. All right. If you don't watch Veep, it's the new season. Starts this Sunday night. If you do watch it, I'm sure you're very excited. If you don't, you should catch up. This is me and Julia Louis-Dreyfus. Every now and then, there's a decision that's a no-brainer, and I can tell you from experience, it was a no-brainer to use Stamps.com when we started using it 11 years ago. Crazy. 11 years ago. Now, more than a decade later, Stamps.com is better than ever. The Stamps.com mobile app is like having a post office in your pocket wherever you are. You can take care of things on the go, like mailing checks, sending invoices, legal documents, and more. Easily schedule package pickups through your Stamps.com dashboard. And when you need to take care of shipping, all you need is a computer and printer. Stamps.com even sends you a free scale. Make the same no-brainer decision that over 1 million other businesses have with Stamps.com. Sign up with the promo code WTF for a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. Just go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the page, and enter code WTF. And I met you briefly. I auditioned for Veep at the beginning.
You did?
I did. you don't have to remember me. Well, no, I don't know. It was like, I don't remember exactly what guy, if it was one of the regular guys, or it was right at the beginning. It was for the, you know, the first.
Oh.
Like that far back.
Oh.
Because you're on season 5?
Yeah.
So it was at the beginning, but you were there. And, you know, the creator was there. What's his name again?
Armando.
Yeah, they were all there. And it was just a couple of lines. And I thought I'd offended you somehow. I made a joke, and I didn't know if it landed correctly.
Well, let's just say I don't remember.
That's fine.
So is that good news?
Sure, it's good news.
What was the joke? Do you remember?
Well, I remember like the tone of it had, you know, was obviously politically charged, and I made a joke sarcastically that, if taken not sarcastically, would have meant that I was, you know, like some sort
of
right wing idiot.
Oh, I'm sure I knew it was a joke.
Yeah, I would think, you know, but there was a beat there, right? Like, you know, when you only have like 2 seconds in those rooms.
In fact, as you're telling me this, it's making me anxious.
Where you walk out, like you literally in there 49 seconds.
Yeah.
And for a week, you're like, oh, it's just fucked up that she thinks I'm oh my God. But I'm grown up enough to know that you didn't register it at all.
I didn't
register.
And
I'm happy you don't remember me at all. It makes me very excited. This is one of the rare times where that was.
I was going to say that maybe the first time in all of Hollywood history that an actor has said that.
So what, you were out doing things? You just came.
I was just a mix, actually, for Veep.
So when does the new season start? I think we're putting this up the day or right there.
Oh, really?
You're the 700th episode. It may not mean anything to you, but it's...
No, that is actually very significant. Why don't we have party hats?
I know. Well,
I'm serious. We should be celebrating.
Yeah,
700?
Yeah, this is you're the celebratory guest. I didn't know if I was going to tell you, but I think you should know that there's no pressure.
Oh, like, I don't feel any pressure.
Oh, good. Yeah.
God, I got 700. That's a lot of fucking talking.
I know. Isn't it crazy?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people have been in here. A lot of people have sat there.
That's incredible.
But you're the first person from, I've not talked to Jerry. I've not talked to Jason. I've not talked to Larry. I haven't talked to any of them. You're the only Seinfeld person.
Well, you need to rectify that, I guess.
I don't know how to get hold of those guys.
Just have your people call somebody.
Yeah, but they don't. I don't know.
They don't do anything.
I could probably get Jason, you know, but I don't think Jerry and Larry have any interest in doing my show.
But look at you. You're already saying no to yourself. You haven't even tried.
You're right. Thank you. See, this is why this is the 700th episode. I'm learning. I'm going to be proactive.
Hey, how does a podcast work? How do you make money from this? Do you?
Yeah, we do now.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it works like a lot, like all the people that used to advertise on radio realize that radio is not really functioning anymore. So we have advertisers. We now are part of like the archive. Only the most recent 50 are available for free for 6 months. Every episode's free, and then it goes behind a sort of an app wall that people subscribe to, but mostly advertising. But you know these episodes get like 500,000 to 1 million. Downloads.
That's extraordinary.
So, you know, people listen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's so great. My kids listen to podcasts now.
How old are the kids?
18 and 23.
Wow, they're big.
Yeah, and so, but it's funny because it's almost like a throwback to old-timey radio.
Sure, yeah.
And they're telling me what podcasts to listen to and et
cetera, et cetera. Oh, did I make the list or no?
Yeah, you did.
Okay.
But anyway, that's why I'm here, because my kids told me it was cool.
Is it true?
Yeah.
Because I wanted to interview you before, or I talked to you. It's not really an interview. I don't even have a sheet. I left it in the house.
Do you want to go get it?
No.
All right.
I don't think I do want to go get it. Because, like, I, you know, you're like one of the funniest people alive.
Nah.
No, I really believe that. I don't
say that. I appreciate that, but
I do not say that lightly.
Okay. Why? What is this?
It's a rock.
Why is it here? Is it petrified something?
You know what that is actually from? Have you ever been to Kauai?
Yeah. Oh, I see. It's volcanic rock.
No, it's not. It's from that weird, shitty beach in Kauai where they, you know, I think it's called like a glass beach where you go and all the sand is glass, you know, from garbage.
Oh.
And there's these old rotted leftover ship parts and motor parts. And this is like some weird old piece of steel
that
I probably shouldn't have stole. Not an exciting backstory, but you've been to Kauai. You like it there?
It's okay.
Yeah. For what? I know if you stay longer than 8 days, it's a problem.
It's all fine.
Yeah.
It's all fine, you know.
Do you like to go anywhere?
Yeah, I do. I like to go to, where do I like to go?
Is there a place you repeat? Like you go back to, like, oh, I'm going to take a break and I'm going to go to that thing, that place.
You know, it's so funny that you're asking me this now because I'm trying to think of what do I just...
love?
And I'm having trouble remembering. But I know I love Santa Barbara, California.
That's close.
Yeah.
That's not even like really an escape.
No, it's not an escape.
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah.
I like doing the most sort of happy adventures I've had are ones where we just really escape from and get into the natural world.
Like
Galapagos, for instance. I've been
Did
there
you go?
Twice. Yeah, I went twice.
My mother once, it changed her life.
It's quite life changing. And it's so otherworldly. I love them. We went to the Grand Canyon recently.
Amazing too. People underestimate that.
Oh my God, it's just glorious. And we went river rafting in Chile once. That was also great. You know, those kinds of trips, which are not particularly cushy, although I love a good hotel.
Yeah.
Like I love, but I love those other, particularly with our boys, you know, it's fun to have sort of these adventure things that we're all taken away. And
you'll never forget them.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, I can't sit on a beach. I got to move. That's why Kauai's okay. You can go hiking and stuff. But
right,
like, if
I see.
But like any vacation for me after 8 days, it's sort of like you're going to fuck it up. Because like if you stay nine, you're like, ugh, we got to eat at that place again. And then if you stay 10, you're like, ugh, we shouldn't have come here.
You need to be exploring or doing something.
Right.
Right. Yeah, I'm not a lie around person. I can do that for 2 days maybe if I have a good book or podcast to listen to.
Yes. I'm so glad that your kids compelled you. But I seriously do think you're hilarious.
Thanks
why do you
lot.
Not think you're, why do you not take that well?
I don't mean to be impolite or anything.
No, it's not impolite.
Thank you very much. I don't know, you know, because I won't live up to your expectation. That's why.
I'm not expecting you to be funny.
Good, because it's not going to happen.
Good. I'd be happy if we both ended crying. That would be at least something.
Actually, it'd be interesting.
It'd be good. People
what, you were about to tell me people cried here?
Oh, no, people have cried here.
Uh-huh.
But not a lot.
Right.
Like, I feel it happening. I just sit here and I go like that to the Kleenex.
Yeah, like you're at the therapist. Yeah.
Do you need? But they usually hand it to you, right?
Or maybe or it's behind your head.
No, I had Will Ferrell in here, and he is decidedly not turned on when he's in an interview. What's odd about the, you know Will, right?
Not Will.
Not Will?
Uh-uh.
He's very funny,
mm-hmm.
don't you think?
Hilarious.
Right. Like, really, like, naturally.
Like, just... You look at him and you laugh.
Exactly.
It's an incredible gift.
Right. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So he's sitting
Isn't
there.
That amazing that some people have
Yeah.
that thing where you know...
You're going to laugh.
You know it. And you're just on the edge of your seat waiting. And it's a very... It's a rare thing.
I get that with Kevin James too, oddly.
Oh, do you?
Yeah. Like when he does stand up and he's just standing there.
Oh, I haven't seen him do
stand up.
Well,
like just, there's a discomfort to it all. That like he just kind of has to,
yeah.
You know, like his whole body needs to be funny at all times.
Yeah.
But Will is there, and I knew that he had a history of not, you know, he'll just talk. He's not going to turn it on.
Yeah.
But it's weird when that happens. You're just sitting there, and part of you is sort of like, wait, you know, like, I'm going to laugh in a second, you know, and it's just not coming. And then when he just gives you the littlest, like,
you
voice,
die.
Or you just die.
Die.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It must be irritating to him.
Well, I think he gets off on it.
Yeah, he must get off.
He's got
control.
What am I talking about? But you work with very funny people on Veep. See, that's your thing, though. Yeah, I mean, you work with funny people, and you're a hilarious, you know, comic actor. It must be exciting to do this show.
It's a dream.
I mean, those guys are hilarious. All of them.
Oh yes, they are. It is a.
I'm glad you didn't cast me. I wasn't right.
Oh.
I wasn't funny enough. It's true. Like, how's the experience compare? Like, we'll go back in a second. But in terms of like what Seinfeld was, which is, you know, the scripts and the sets. I mean, what's the difference in the experience of this? Aside from you're the lead and the president and you're dealing with Washington and the different. It's completely different, I'd imagine.
Well, it's very different. But fundamentally, I'm going to say it's similar.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it's a very, very funny group of people who like to play and work it as an ensemble.
Right, right.
And so all we're trying to do is get to the funniest thing we can get to as a group.
Right, yeah.
And so in that sense, it's similar.
Yeah.
But of course, tonally, it's completely different.
Yeah.
But it does have that fundamental similarity, which I think is imperative to be in place.
And what's the key to it though? Like when you were like I know Walsh, Matt Walsh.
You gotta have him.
I've had
on.
Him on.
Oh yeah.
Years ago. I love him. I love him. Yeah. I mean, I knew them when they started in New York.
Yes.
But they're like, how do you orchestrate such a large cast at times, you know, to sort of find funny, because there's a lot of physical comedy, there's the script, but there's also movement in there. I mean, how much do you improvise, or do you run it over and over again before? Because you're
we improvise and we run it. I mean, it's just a fucking soup of all of it.
Right.
And it's a mess, and it's somewhat chaotic, and the hours are excruciating, and it's very hard work.
But rewarding.
Ultimately rewarding, but sometimes you feel as if you are going to die from it.
Really?
Yes. I'm not kidding.
I don't think people realize that.
I know, I probably shouldn't be saying that, because it doesn't sell it particularly well.
No, but people love the show. It's a funny show. It's not going to undersell it, but I've been sort of hung up about, like, because I think a lot of people who are just watching us work, they don't really take in mind that, like, it's hard work.
It's hard work, yeah. I mean, we're not,
you know. Don't just show up and do your play.
Right.
And then everyone claps and you go home.
You're not curing cancer, but it feels like it when you're doing it.
Right.
That's
like what would make it an excruciating day? Like, because you're sort of like you feel like you're gonna die, just like.
Well,
long.
I mean, if a scene isn't working, and it's taking longer to get, and you're trying to figure it out in the moment.
Is that usually a comedy issue when a scene isn't working, or
that is the most difficult challenge? The
right.
comedy. If a scene's not working because. I mean, there are millions of reasons the scene doesn't work. The camera isn't in the right place,
right.
or it doesn't make plausible sense. That's the other thing, is that we're trying constantly to sort of thread that needle of...
Like, oh, what happened with this guy 2 episodes ago? Is this going to add up?
Right, or do you buy this?
Right.
Is the reality of this circumstance at this place in this moment... Do we feel as if we vetted this enough so that you would actually buy that this might happen?
Because you're the president. You have to have...
Yeah.
You
know. I mean, and of course, there is, you know, there's a, you know, what's the word? An element of suspension of disbelief, but not too much. We
right.
try very hard. In fact,
right.
we have a lot of consultants who work on the show who are in the business of politics, who read our scripts.
That's exciting.
Like Eric Lesser, who worked with the president and...
Which president? This
sorry,
one?
Obama. Yes, the current one. Anita McBride, who worked with the Bushes and her husband. Who else do we have? We have a lot. Tammy Haddad.
And they're all honest consultants?
Yeah.
Just Washington insiders, people who have done the... And they're on set? Or are they just there?
Sometimes they stop by set, but ultimately we send them scripts.
And do they? And what are their notes like? This would never happen.
Yeah. Or if you want to do this, you have to have this in place. Or no, Secret Service would be with her at this point. Or
oh, really?
Yes.
So you want that authenticity? You have to have it.
Oh yeah.
And what's the reaction from Washington people to the show?
Pretty positive.
Yeah.
They all think it's about the other person. Really?
Really?
Yeah.
I knew that guy. I know who that's based on.
Exactly. Which makes me happy. That's good.
Yeah. And when you, how were you brought into it originally? Like Armando Iannucci did the, what was it called? The Loop?
He did a series called The Thick of It in the UK, right. Which is an incredibly fabulous series. I hadn't seen that, but I had seen In the Loop.
Yeah, me too, right.
My agent told me it was being developed at HBO, this unhappy vice president. I was like, ooh, yeah, I got to get on that action.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you hear a female unhappy vice president. What more do you need to know?
Yeah.
I mean, that sounds like very ripe from comedy.
And it was hilarious right from the get-go.
Yeah, it's fun.
I don't know. Like, I think that you've done an amazing thing in that a lot of people don't really survive a hit sitcom career-wise, you know, in the sense that you're so identified.
Yeah, it's tricky.
Right?
Yeah, it's tricky.
And were you conscious of that?
Yeah, but I didn't dwell on it.
Uh-huh. Because New Adventures was great in the movie stuff. You were in, I liked it. I thought it was fun. Yeah, I don't know how to read your look. I don't know if that was.
No. It was good. No. I actually have a lot of love for that show. No kidding. I really do.
And you were in Deconstructing Harry.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
What? Was that not a good experience? It was funny.
It was, here's the thing. Years and years ago, I was hired, this is back when I was on SNL, so it had to have been like 84, uh-huh. Right? And Woody was making Hannah and her sisters.
You were in that, yeah. I don't remember.
You don't remember it, because I was like, I was actually quite literally an extra, except an extra with one line, you know what
Where
I mean?
Where was it? At a party? Or?
No, it was at the beginning of the movie when he was running some comedy show. And I was a PA or something walking alongside him. And I look like Madonna.
Like, it was like an SNL style show,
correct.
Right? And they were dealing with the Belushi character, or a character who was on drugs. And they were coming into this back room. It's like, he's all fucked up again or something like that.
Something like
right.
that.
Right, yeah.
Okay. But anyway, so I was, and so I got cast. Juliet Taylor was the casting director, and I got cast in this. I was so excited.
You're like, what, 24, 25?
No, not even. I was probably 22.
Okay.
So I get cast, go, tiny little part. I was so terrified to be in the scene with him. Let's see, I'm gonna make this as short as possible.
No, take your time. We have time.
So we have this scene in which he thinks he has a brain tumor.
Right.
And so in the scene, he, as the actor, says, wait a minute, stop. Does anybody hear that?
Yeah.
Because he's hearing a noise.
Right, the ringing, yeah.
And so, but you know, remember, he's also directing the movie.
Right.
Okay. And I was in this scene.
Yeah.
And I was supposed to cross behind him or in front of him, I can't remember which, as he's saying that line.
Right.
So we're rolling camera. He goes, wait a minute, stop. And I stopped because I thought he was talking to me to stop.
Yeah.
But it was the line in the scene.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Keep in mind, I'm like a low
a kid,
low on the totem pole.
Right, right.
So I go, oh my God, I'm so sorry. So then we do it again. And we do it, and so roll, camera, okay, action, go, la, la, la. Does anybody hear this? Wait a minute. I hear it ringing. Stop. And I did it again.
You did it.
I did it twice.
What'd you say?
I go, oh my God, oh, I can't believe I just did it again. I was overcome with nerves, right?
Right.
And so then he made a joke at my expense, you know, like, I can't remember what it was, except that I was incredibly humiliated and tried to act as if I wasn't.
Right.
Okay, so that was that experience. Suffice it to say, it did not go particularly well.
Right.
So years later, I get a call that he's doing this movie and he would love me to be in it. And I think I even talked to him, and he said, I'm going to send you the pages. And, you know, really, if you want to do it, great, and we'd love to have you. Oh, my God, I'm so excited. This is now, you know, middle of doing Seinfeld, or even towards the end. And so I remember I was with my husband, Brad, and the pages came in, and he said, well, do you think you're going to do it? And I said, what do you mean, do I think I'm going to do it? Of course, it's a Woody Allen movie.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, what you know, unless he's got me blowing him or something, of course I'm going to do it.
Right.
And half the scene was a blowjob scene.
Yeah, right.
Right. And so anyway, I did it anyway.
It was funny.
I didn't think it was that funny.
What, the scene or the movie?
The movie's funny, but the scene wasn't that funny. And the other thing is that...
Why? I mean, because it was uncomfortable, it was weird, but the way it was loaded up that, you know, you were the sister.
I thought it was too much. Okay. I don't know. For me, anyway.
for your taste?
Yeah.
The blowjob
humor? I can't watch it. I can't watch it. And the other thing is we had to reshoot it. So, and by the way, I, in fact, was just barely pregnant at the time. Uh-huh. So when I came back to reshoot it, yeah, 7 months later, I was a house. So they had to find the same wardrobe in an extra large and like shoot me, you know, neck up.
Yeah, if you were pregnant, it would have been a much darker joke, wouldn't it?
Possibly funnier.
I think that's probably true.
Yeah.
So I talked to a lot of SNL people here.
Yeah.
But where'd you grow up?
I was born in New York and then I moved to Washington when I was like 8.
Really? Was your mom in politics?
No. I live with my mom and my stepfather. My stepfather was a doctor and was working, he worked at GW and he was the dean of the med school there and stuff like that.
Well, that's a good school, right?
Oh, yeah.
So what kind of doctor was he?
He was originally a thoracic surgeon.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh.
I grew up with a doctor as a father. It's good when you don't feel well.
What kind of doctor was
orthopedic
he?
Orthopedic surgeon.
Oh.
Yeah, he's a, you know, saws and drills and stuff.
Of course.
Yeah. But it was always...
Where, in New York?
I grew up in New Mexico. Uh-huh. He's from Jersey, though. These Jersey people.
Uh-huh. This is fascinating. You grew up in New Mexico. How is it you have this accent that you have?
Do I have an accent?
I feel as if it's a New York accent.
Well, people think it's Jersey. Maybe Jersey's still left in there somewhere. Both my parents are from Jersey.
Oh, that's what it is. You picked up their voice. Yeah,
probably. I don't think there's a New Mexico accent.
If there is one, we haven't heard it yet.
Okay. Well, let me know if you do, and I'll try to hold on to that. Maybe I'm...
All of a sudden, you start talking in a twang.
Yeah. I don't know if it's weird, because it's not really Texas, it's not the South. I don't know. I don't know if there's an accent there. So where was your regular dad?
In New York.
Yeah?
Yes.
Did you have a back and forth kind of thing?
I did a back and forth thing.
Oh, was that good, bad?
What do you think?
Terrible.
Yeah, not easy. I'm the only child of my parents' marriage, so I have two sisters on my mother's side and two sisters on my father's side.
Oh, half sisters.
Correct.
Wow, that's like a lot. Do you have relationships with all of them?
Oh yeah, very much so. Yeah, it's nice actually. I like having all those sisters. That's very nice. But the going back and forth between families, not ideal.
Yeah, my parents got divorced when I was in my 30s and it wasn't as tricky.
Did you see that coming? Yes,
yeah,
of kinda. Course you did.
I mean, I don't know.
When you were in your 30s, that's unbelievable. How long had they been married?
Well, they've been married like as long, that shortly after, you know, not much longer. I'm the oldest and they had me a couple years in. So just over that.
Wow.
Yeah, no, it was a big explosion of emotion and weirdness. And, you know, I guess I saw it coming. It's hard to, you don't have as much invested in it, but it wasn't surprising necessarily. You
right.
know, once everything became revealed, it was like, holy shit, I didn't even know these people.
Wow.
Did you ever have that experience with your parents? Like, what are you?
Oh, yeah.
Like recently, it sounds like last week. So growing up, what were you doing?
I was just a girl going to school. I always wanted to act. I mean, I don't know how you felt, but I always felt like I really wanted to do it.
Kids want to do something. That's one of the things they want to do.
That was the only thing that was interesting to me.
Do you know why it was interesting to you? Did you like movie stars? Were there certain people that you were like, oh, I want to do that?
I wanted to grow up.
Uh-huh.
I was eager to grow up.
Were you like ahead of your growing up thing? Were you one of those kids who was sort of like already acting grown up?
I tried to act grown up.
Yeah, how'd that go?
Well, not when I was very little, I remember noticing that that when you got your big teeth in, they hang down
a little
lower
more
than your lip.
Yeah.
And I was desperate to get my big teeth. And I vividly remember very frequently walking down the streets of New York with my mom, lifting up my lip like this and thinking I was fooling people to thinking that I had my big teeth.
People were just like, what's wrong with that kid?
Right. But in my mind, they were thinking, oh, that's that kid's got her big teeth. She's getting old. I swear to you, I was dying to grow up.
Did your mom say, stop it?
She didn't notice. She was not. She did, this was something I did in my own little head.
And it's also New York, so it's also hip and cool, and you're probably going to swanky places.
I don't know if they were swanky.
Right.
You know.
But all New York felt swanky then, because we're about the same age. And like New York, when I was like 13 or 14, when it was just starting to get cool again.
Yeah.
It was so exciting to be there.
I really love it. I have I mean, when I was really little living there, I don't know how swanky it was, but it was, you know.
It was kind of gnarly in the 70s, right? Yeah.
Yeah, but I was born in 61, so I was, you know, I guess I shouldn't, who gives a fuck? Anyway, whatever. And so, I was in the city and we had the blackout and I love riding buses.
Yeah.
I just love it.
Do you still love it?
I do actually love getting on a public bus.
But New York, do you love New York still?
Yeah. I wish it wasn't so expensive and
I don't know who lives there.
Crowded, very rich people.
It's weird, man.
You just need so much money.
But also like the whole flavor of the city, it's like not what it used to be. Like I lived on the Lower East Side for a couple of years and then around 3rd and 16th for a couple of years and it was in the mid 80s even. And now you go to the Lower East Side, it's like there's no like grit or menace or like sense that like all kinds of people live in New York anymore. It feels like a vacation, like Europeans are using it as a vacation island.
Because I think it is.
Yeah. So like
what about Central Park? Can we even talk about that?
What happened?
It's glorious.
It's good.
And
now.
I mean, you could not cross Central Park past
right.
What? 3 o'clock in the afternoon, you would get hurt.
Yeah. You didn't know who was hiding.
Yeah. Yeah. There were people hiding.
Really functions as a reprieve now. Mm. I read a book about Central Park once and the whole idea of it, and it kind of changed my life.
Really?
Well, yeah.
In what sense?
Well, you had these new cities when New York was growing. There was this idea that, a lot of people were moving from the country, so they had to bring some element of that to balance the city. So it was actually built for a purpose to have that sort of pastoral reprieve that functioned in light of city life.
Let me tell you something. That's so goddamn genius, and I wish they'd done it here.
Right?
In Los Angeles. It's genius. The Japanese call it forest bathing.
Oh, they do?
Mm-hmm.
And
it's important. It's really important. It is important for the emotional, mental health.
Yeah, I agree with you. So what happens? So you graduate college?
No, because I went to Northwestern.
You got your teeth.
My big teeth came in.
Yeah.
See?
Yeah.
My big teeth came in, and then I went to Northwestern.
Yeah.
and then I got hired to do Saturday Night Live after my junior year in college. So I came to New York. So I didn't, in fact, actually graduate. But I very happily got an honorary degree.
Later?
Later.
They gave it to you?
Oh, they gave it to me and I fucking framed that thing and it's up.
Yeah, you deserved it. You did enough work.
I don't know if I deserved it, but let's just say I framed it.
What was it an honorary degree in?
I can't remember. I'm not that smart.
You okay in the chair? What's going on?
I'm trying to get comfortable.
I'm sorry.
This cushion is driving me nuts.
Do you want to take it off?
No, it's fine.
This is the first time that's happened in 700 episodes.
We'll see.
That people just...
That's part of the celebration.
You're going to fidget angrily?
Yeah, exactly.
I'll get a new chair.
You might want to think about it.
Okay, I will. You know who didn't complain? The president.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to ask you when he came.
The president didn't complain about the chair.
He has better manners than I.
Uh-huh.
When he came, they had to shut down this whole goddamn neighborhood, right?
Yeah, well, they had to clear it of cars. No one could park around here for a day or two.
Were your neighbors pissed?
No, yeah, everyone was excited. The one neighbors that were uncomfortable, they were like, we're getting out of here.
Oh, really?
I thought they thought it was going to be, a drone target.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what to, what was going to happen. But no, we asked him if we could put snipers up there and he was good. And it was it was a very exciting day that I talk about a lot. I think people are now listening to my podcast thinking like, how long before he mentions the president?
Well, just cut this out then. Do you edit these things?
Sure.
All right.
But we're not going to edit the chair business. That stays.
Make me look like an asshole.
No, I like you. All right. So how does SNL see you? What are you doing? Are you doing stage work?
I was doing a stage. Yes.
What did you go to school for?
Theater.
Okay.
And so, but while I was there, I also did work outside of school, and I did Second City for a while. And I also—
Were you in the cast?
I was in the touring company.
You were in the touring company?
Yeah.
For what, a summer?
During my junior year, actually. I did that while I was going to school.
On weekends, or it must have been—
Uh-oh. Is a drone coming?
No, but that looked like a big helicopter, like a president helicopter. Is he in town today? Maybe he's coming back over. Maybe, did you tell him you were going to be here?
What day is it?
It's Tuesday.
He might be in town.
Really?
Yeah, because he's coming to town this week because I know there's a fundraiser.
Huh. Because that wasn't a police helicopter. That was a big helicopter.
Wouldn't it be amazing if he just walked in here right now?
It'd be hilarious.
Oh, my God. It would be the best podcast.
It would. It would be amazing. I just let you guys talk. Have you met him? Of course. Does he watch Veep?
I think he does a little bit. Or yeah. He sees pieces of it.
Where'd you meet him?
I've met him at a couple of times. I met him at the White House, and I met him at... I met him at a fundraiser before he was even the nominee. It was back in 2000.
When he was a senator?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And what did you feel then? Did you feel like, oh, this guy...
This guy's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right?
And by the way, he's my age, so...
Yeah, a contemporary.
Wild, right?
Right?
Yeah.
Like the president's just this guy. He's a couple years older than me. He went to college down the street.
I know it.
Yeah. He talked to me. He's like, I can't believe I'm back in this neighborhood.
Yeah. It's a great neighborhood.
Yeah, I like it. So, all right. So the touring company. Who was in the touring company with you?
I can't remember. But we did the touring company, but you know, for a while. But more importantly, I was in this... I was with this other company called the Practical Theater Company that was started by some college buddies of mine, including my now husband. Then
you knew him that long?
Yeah, Brad Hall, and it was called Practical Theater Company. And we had this big hit show in Chicago, and it really was a big hit.
What was it?
It was called the Practical Theater Company's Golden 50th Anniversary Jubilee,
mm-hmm.
And which is
sketch
a big
show.
And so we'd gotten rave reviews and all these people were coming to see it, blah, 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 blah. And this is over the summer. And unbeknownst to us, one night there were producers of SNL were in the audience watching the show.
Good. It's lucky you didn't know.
Yeah, I know. And so, and they came backstage and they offered us jobs on the show.
Who? You and Brad?
Me and Brad and Gary Kroger and Paul Barras. They offered him a job as a writer on the show.
Gary Kroger, what happened to that guy?
He's in Iowa now, and uh-huh. He's actually running for Congress.
Oh, really?
Yes. Yeah. And
for the good team?
Yeah.
Okay. So you didn't finish school, and you told them, like, I got to go be on SNL. And were you a fan of SNL at that point? Did you, like...
You know, I wasn't really, at that moment, wasn't really watching it.
Right.
But I had been, because, you know, when SNL started, I was in junior high and high school when it actually began.
Right, like in the 70s, yeah.
And so
it was great.
It was the show for my generation.
Yeah, and you had to stay up to watch it, stay home,
or put in a tape to VCR it to tape it.
Figure that out,
but you couldn't, so you stayed up. And anyway, you were 15, so staying up till 1 o'clock in the morning was like, who cares?
And your parents would let you. I remember I had to watch it where in my parents' door was shut, and I couldn't turn it up too loud, so I wouldn't wake them up.
Yeah.
And watch SNL.
Oh, God. It was unbelievable, right? And they spoke to us, and it was so irreverent.
It was great.
And there's nothing like it on television, don't you think?
Yeah, just Chevy and John. You'd lock into your people. Like, you know, who was you?
That's right.
Who'd you like?
Well, I like Jane.
Yeah? She was great.
She was amazing.
So funny.
Yeah.
And Gilda.
And Gilda.
Yeah.
And Bill Murray.
Yeah, he was a little later, but great.
But great.
Oh, my God. So funny.
It was an amazing show.
Do you know Bill Murray?
I do know him. I've met him a couple times. We did a play reading long ago.
How was that? Do you still get that thing when you meet these people where you're like, it's a fan thing?
Bill, I it's funny. I feel kinship with him. So in a way, like—
As an alum?
Perhaps, but also just sort of, when we did this reading, I'm telling you, it was years ago. Actually, it was an Arthur Miller play. Arthur Miller was still alive.
I wonder what that was. That like a new
say,
one?
Yes. I want to say it was called Resurrection.
Mm-hmm.
And Bill and Nathan Lane and I did a reading.
Yeah.
I think they wanted to have it read for backers or something.
Uh-huh.
And anyway, it was a very exciting thing to do.
Yeah.
The play was not great.
But Arthur Miller was there.
But Arthur Miller was there.
Yeah.
And so we got to do that and work on it for, you know, 48 hours. That was really fun.
Uh-huh.
But I don't know. How did I go on that tangent? But anyway.
We were just talking about the first SNL. So you were a fan when you were in junior high, but you hadn't been watching.
Yeah. And it was a different regime running the show because Lauren was not there.
You were in that weird window. You're the only person I've talked to, I think, that like, because I, you know, I got obsessed with Lorne Michaels because I had a failed audition with him.
Oh.
And it, like, it was the theme of this podcast for about 600 and some odd episodes. And then I got to interview Lorne. Like, I went to his office and got closure.
How did that work? Can you explain to me the closure?
You could listen to it.
No, just tell me really quick.
Well, I had, you know, my experience of what he did and that when I met with him, like they had come to see me at a comedy club and then they had me do a screen test in the studio. And then I met with Lorne and I thought I blew it for very peculiar reasons. And I thought his intentions were different than what they turned out to be. Like I was involved with alternative comedy at that time downtown. And I, you know, he said, you know, the best part of the interview was really like I got paranoid that I took a candy and that was part of a test. And like I was a little high. So so what he said, like there was an article on the comedy thing I was involved with in the New York Times, you know, about alternative comedy on Lower East Side. And when I got in to see Lorne, he goes, you know, I don't know what you think you're doing below 14th Street, but it doesn't mean anything. So I thought he literally brought me up there to sort of teach me some sort of lesson. And when the whole first part of the interview with him was me trying to, you know, go beat for beat from my memory of this thing with him.
Oh.
And when I told him that line, he looked at me and goes, I was trying to help you.
Like how does that help?
Well, he's basically, it's not show business. You know, like you're not going anywhere in that thing, you know, like it was like I thought he was just trying to like you stupid, but he wasn't really. And according to him, you know, in retrospect, I'm sure he wasn't festering on it his whole life. But
oh, my God,
it was pretty great to meet him.
And yeah.
Because like you, when you realize he's just this, he's okay, he's rich and he's powerful and he's a show business mogul, but he's still a guy that goes to work every day. He's been walking that hallway for 40 years almost.
Right, it's incredible.
But so you got in this window. Who was in charge?
A gentleman by the name of Dick Ebersol.
Right, the head of NBC at the time, right? Or something like that? Or he went on to become that, or he was...
He's a head of NBC Sports for a very long time.
Right.
After that.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then what was the experience? You go to New York...
It was not so great.
Really?
Yeah, it was not so great.
Yeah, but you, how could you know what to even expect? You were
complete, I didn't.
A complete newbie. You're probably the youngest person that ever.
I was a nincompoop.
But you were. Are you probably the youngest person that ever was on there? Oh, you were 21?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I think that I don't think I was the young. Now I'm not the youngest. I think they got somebody younger. But whatever, it doesn't matter. I was obviously quite young. Yeah. I thought it was going to be like. You know, I had stars in my eyes, and yeah. I thought it was going to be like an ensemble. We all be working together and finding funny things to do, and
yeah.
You know,
yeah, yeah,
it would be that
fun.
Kind of, it would
yeah.
be that. It would be
right,
like Veep, to
yeah,
be honest,
yeah. right,
or like Seinfeld to a certain extent. Or, I mean, you know, it
or
was
like
just,
a sketch show too.
Yeah,
like
it was just everybody.
Theater.
Yeah, everybody. Yeah. You're here to support.
And, yeah,
and
yeah.
That, it was not that at all. And in addition to that, you know, I didn't come particularly prepared. I was. Not a stand-up.
Right.
I didn't have a bag of characters
right.
that I could draw upon
yeah.
at all.
Yeah.
Maybe like I had two.
Right.
And, you know, I was an actress.
Yeah.
And I don't mean the people who are on the show aren't actors and actresses, but I guess I was just, I didn't have the right mindset and I was ill-prepared for this moment.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
And... highly misogynistic workplace.
Yeah.
And everybody's completely fucked up on drugs out of their minds. Okay? So it's all of that. And that's what was going on. It was a very dog eat dog and it was just
who was on that when you got there, what was the cast?
Piscopo and Eddie Murphy
yeah.
and Tim Kazurinsky and Mary Gross and
Mary Gross wasn't fucked up on drugs, was she?
No. She wasn't. yeah, she was not.
Right.
But it was a bit of a mess. But I just certainly learned a lot. And then the third year, I was hung on for 3 years. And the third year I was there, Larry David was there. And so that's how I met Larry for the very first time.
He was there
time.
As a writer or
yes.
as a performer? As a writer?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Who else was writing? I mean, are there any people that you still have relationships with professionally that were there during that time other than Larry?
Professionally, no. I would say Andy Breckman is somebody that I saw him recently in New York, but we don't. It's not like we communicate all the time.
Right, right.
You know. And then I've subsequently gotten to know other writers who have worked there. You know, it's funny, that place does have a kind of a, it's almost like a, alumni.
College,
college kind of feeling to it. So once you've been on it, even if you sucked, which I did, by the way, I think there's a sort of built-in.
But you're so alive and, you know, and cute and funny.
Yeah, anyway, take my word for it. I was not, it really was not.
Have you looked at yourself on that show recently?
I can't watch it. I don't watch it. I really, it's a nightmare.
But you're still pretty filled with excitement and very funny.
Yeah, okay, well, thank you very much.
And your teeth, big teeth, were good.
Big teeth. I never told that story to anybody. I don't know what made me think of it.
It's the best story I've ever heard. it's a window in to the comic mind.
Yeah, I suppose, or something.
So, all right, so it was horrible.
So it was very horrible, and...
Did you get axed, or you left, or did Lauren come back at that point, or what happened?
After that, my third year, so whatever that, 85, Dick left.
Yeah.
And I mean, they completely overhauled everything.
Right.
And I didn't even... I'm sure if I'd said, oh, please, can I stay? They would have said, no, you're fired. But I didn't wait around for that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because it's just a year-by-year contractual thing, or at least it was back then.
So there you are in New York. You didn't finish college. You're an actress. You've done this
thing.
Seminal show. But did you get, were you recognized in, did you?
Not really. I mean, I was, you know, I got a lot of experience, which is fantastic. But I was trying to find work. I was in New York looking for work as an actress.
Was it like, so was it at all a crash course in show business in terms of saw that? Because it sounds to me, outside of being misogynistic and drug addled, that there was mostly opportunists who were trying to, get in front of the camera, get enough traction to get bigger. And I mean, it seemed that's what happened to a lot of those people.
Yeah, that's right. I learned an enormous amount.
Was it heartbreaking?
Yes, it was heartbreaking. It was heartbreaking. But it was ultimately, at the end of the day, incredibly, it was monster education.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just like, you couldn't have paid enough to get that degree. Because that was, I mean, at the very least, I learned how to do live television.
Right.
And that is daunting.
Sure. And it's not even that necessary a skill necessarily.
No, it's not necessary at all.
But it's amazingly.
But it's amazing to be able to do it.
And not be afraid or, to can handle it.
To handle it.
Wow.
Right. So, and I watched all sorts of, I learned a lot during this time. I really did. Probably some things I can't even express what they are. But well, I learned what I didn't want to do.
Which was? Become a monster?
Become unhappy. I didn't want to be unhappy anymore. It was an unhappy time, and I made a mental note that if I was going to keep doing this, I had to find a way to make it be a fun job.
Yeah.
And then I did. And by the way, I did ever since then.
Wow. Well, that's amazing that you knew you wanted to be happy.
Well, I think... It just didn't feel right.
Yeah. No, but because so many comics, I guess maybe I'm just speaking for myself. Like I don't think of Larry David at any point going like, I just need to make myself happy.
No, that's not his thing. But I guess, I wanted to have fun.
Right.
Else am I doing this for?
In life, period.
And probably I should apply that more to my life, period. But specifically to working.
That's why you wanted to be an actress.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why I was trying to get out of class so I could go rehearse the show. So much more fun.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Than
yeah.
sitting there and,
learning.
Reading fucking, Ode on a Grecian Urn or whatever the hell it's called.
Yeah. Did that seem to, that one stuck as the example of like, this is not what I want to do.
Truth is beauty. Beauty is truth. That's what it says at the end.
Okay.
Or something
that was
like that.
Enough.
That's all I need
you
to
get
know.
It. I get it.
All right. I got to go.
Yeah.
We've got tech rehearsal.
Oh my God. So when you were there though, it must've been exciting to work with some of the hosts.
Totally. Stevie Wonder came through. McGovern.
Yeah, George McGovern.
McGovern. Yeah, that was so cool.
What was he doing then? He wasn't running. There was later.
No, he was trying to identify his brand. I don't know what he was doing.
He just showed up, huh?
He hosted.
I wonder what he was doing then.
I don't know.
Someone's going to know. So Stevie Wonder, George
Tina
McGovern.
Tina Turner.
So you liked watching the musical guests. Like
some
were,
of them, yeah. But was Stevie the host? I feel like Stevie
was
the host.
I think you're right. I think
Jerry Lewis.
Ooh, how was that?
Crazy.
Yeah. But you were sort of like, oh my God, that's him.
Yeah. But Stevie, I remember as being, he stood out to me as being one of the greatest guys ever.
Yeah.
Well, him and McGovern, to be honest.
Really?
Yeah. Well, actually, speaking of happiness, they both had it.
Yeah. Peace of mind.
Peace of mind and a kind of earnest authenticity that I really dug.
Right.
Yeah.
Not desperate and weird and overcompensating.
Yeah, I mean, we all have our shit, but
sure.
I felt as if there was an innate kindness in both of them that I just loved. And then beyond that, a lot of something there to back it up.
Right, right. You like know? Their lives meant something.
Of course.
Yeah, yeah.
Completely. And they were doing great things with themselves.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So how do you make the transition? So you're back in New York. You stay in New York at that time? Did you have a place there?
Yeah.
And you just stayed in your apartment?
Yeah, I had a place there. God, I wish I'd hung on to that.
Right?
Ugh.
Where was it?
On the Upper West Side, 85th and West End.
Like a one bedroom or
two bedroom?
A two bedroom.
Like two you were bedroom, just, two bath.
And you were just renting it for like $300 a month or something? $200
Yeah, I can't even remember. Can you imagine? I mean, that thing's got to be worth millions now. Anyway, whatever.
Yeah.
So, I was living there and then for about a year. And then I went and I was not getting any work.
In New York.
Right. And so I went to L.A. for so-called pilot season.
Right.
And lived at the Oakwood Apartments on on Barham.
Right. Where everybody lives when that happens.
And so I got a pilot. But then it didn't get picked up. So I made that money. So that was great.
What was it?
It was called The Art of Being Nick. It was a spinoff from Family Ties.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't get picked
up.
But
at least you knew you had the goods.
Yeah, that
you
was
got
the
cast.
That,
not
I
easy.
Got cast.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah,
so that was good to get that job.
So you're out here in Oakwood Apartments, your sad furnished apartment with the pool and weirdos.
Yeah, right. Actually, I lived there with Mary Gross.
What's she doing?
She's living in Santa Monica.
Okay.
And doing her thing.
Okay.
She's great.
I always liked her.
She's wonderful. And so then eventually, I think I came back to New York, couldn't get more work. It was just, I could not get work.
Were you working otherwise? Did you do other shit? Did you do other jobs? Or were you just all
no.
show business?
I was all show biz.
Yeah.
I'd saved my money.
Yeah?
Yeah.
From SNL and stuff?
Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I'm 21 years old and you're making.
Yeah.
Stash it. What am I going to spend it on?
And how were your parents reacting to your life choices?
I never asked them. They seemed to be supportive. I think they were a little bit shocked. They must have been, right?
Well, I imagine when you drop out of school to do a TV show, there was excitement mixed with fear.
Probably, but I never asked them about any of it. I didn't say, do you think I should do this? I was like, I'm doing this.
Right.
And I'm going actually next week. I'm moving to New York.
Well, did they have any control over you anyways? Or were you just sort of like...
No. Right. None. So, I mean, I was doing that.
Right.
You know?
Right.
It's wild.
Yeah.
Now that I have now that I'm a parent of a child that age, you know, it's pretty bizarre.
Do you think like, you know, do you think back at what a nightmare you must have been? Or do you not see that?
I was a nightmare.
Right. You were a good kid?
I was relatively good.
Right.
I mean, I was a little bit badly behaved, but they didn't know about that.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
But I actually was a good kid.
Right. You seem like it. You don't seem like you destroyed yourself in any way and
put
yourself back together.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You just decided on show business.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Now, were you dating Brad all the way through this time?
I was dating him from, you know, my junior year of college on. Yeah.
And that was the guy?
That was the guy, yeah.
When did you get married?
87.
Oh, so yeah, so it's been a long time.
Yeah.
Wild, right? Congratulations.
Thanks a million.
You did it.
You did it. Then I moved to California and I did a series here for 2 years.
Which one?
It was called Day by Day.
Oh, I didn't see it.
Yeah, it's fine.
Was it good?
No, I don't think so.
1988.
And so anyway.
But you're working, so that must have been great though.
Oh, it's great. And it was all at NBC. So that was all good, because then I was sort of starting to sort of, they knew me at NBC.
Yeah.
Okay.
You were a funny chick.
Yeah, funny-ish.
Okay.
But I was, but I actually was funny in this show.
Yeah.
And it's probably because I was better suited to play a part as opposed to three, try to come up with a bunch of different characters.
Right, right.
And then I got, actually, you know what?
Mm.
I got an overall deal. I got an overall deal. Imagine
at NBC?
That. No, at Warner Brothers.
Yeah.
Television.
Okay.
And so I developed a script there, and that, and this is right after Day by Day, and it was a script for me to star in. Then the script came in, and they paid me money, Warner Brothers, to do this. The script came in, and it was not what I had envisioned, and it didn't seem fixable to me.
Right.
And so I said, I don't want to do it. I can't do it. And I had a window. There was legally a window in which I could pull out of this thing.
Yeah.
And then about 3 days later, or even maybe not, maybe like 2 days later, these four Seinfeld Chronicles scripts come to me, okay?
Mm-hmm.
From Larry. And I read them. And
he
I,
sent them to you. Larry did. He remembered you and you guys. Were you
yes.
maintaining a friendship? Or
no,
just, okay.
But he just sent it.
Right.
And so he sent them to me. And in two of the four scripts, my character didn't really have very much to do.
Right.
And the other two, more so.
Yeah.
But this was definitely a supporting role, and the other show was like a starring role.
Right.
Right? But I thought, ooh, this writing is so great. I mean, mm-hmm. I was able to recognize.
It was all Larry?
I mean, I don't know what the writing credit is on that, actually. Mm-hmm. That's a good question.
Yeah.
I don't know. But, I mean, it's definitely.
Maybe Larry and Jerry.
Larry and Jerry together. Yeah. Definitely, but certainly Larry's voice is present as a writer for whom I had known third year at SNL, and it was the same kind of tone.
Did you guys have a relationship at SNL?
Yes. I mean, yes, we're friends there.
Yeah.
We bonded over unhappiness.
In fact.
Really, truly. And so I read this, oh my God, this sounds really good. And so anyway, I got this, I went in, I hung out with Jer, blah, 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 blah. And that happened. But let me tell you something, what happened? Warner Brothers threatened to sue me because they thought I had done something illegal or unethical.
By just meeting with them?
No, they were suspicious of the fact that I pulled out of my deal with them and then so quickly on the heels of that became involved with this gig. And I was terrified. You know, this is just, you know, I was like, nothing. I was
just an actress.
A little person.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this was a huge studio and they were threatening and they said they wanted their money back. And it was a lot of money. I mean, it was a lot. It was I'm going to tell you right now, 75 grand.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of money.
Sure.
And particularly back then, it was huge.
Yeah.
And I thought, I didn't do anything wrong. I didn't break our contract. I got advice from, one of my attorneys who said, you got to just give it back. I'm like, but if I do that, doesn't imply that I've done something.
Right. Where's your sense of, you got a sense of justice.
Yeah,
you?
Because I didn't do anything wrong, right?
Yeah.
And I called Gary David Goldberg, who's a creator of Family Ties and Spin City. And he's subsequently passed away, but he was a mentor of mine and a very good friend. And I told him this.
You knew him from Day by Day?
I did.
Yeah.
Actually, I knew him from before that because I'd done this spinoff of Family Ties.
Oh, right.
And I told him that Warner Brothers was threatening to sue and what should I do? And I was so scared and I'm being told by lawyers to give the money back. And he said, you know what? I don't respond well to bullying. Keep the money. And so I took his advice.
Right.
And I never heard from Warner Brothers. Nothing. Is that wild? That was so scary.
It's touching in a way.
It's touching because I love Gary Goldberg.
Yeah, he was
such
great.
Such a good man. Oh, my God. If you had met him, you would have died.
So that's all they... Because they obviously didn't have any legal grounds.
They had no legal grounds.
And they were just being dicks.
They were being dicks. And I called their bluff.
What a great thing.
Yeah, it was a great thing, actually. It was a good lesson.
Uh-huh.
You know, I don't respond to bullying.
Yeah.
That's what he
But it's hard
saying.
To know that's what's happening when
I didn't even think of it as such.
And also when you're looking for an opportunity, you want your career, you're just start at the beginning of your career kind of, and you want to work and they're just
totally.
They're just trying to teach you a lesson and crush your spirit for what? so what, you're going to go back? You were out of the deal, and they didn't even have you. They wanted you back, or they just wanted to teach you a lesson.
Who knows?
That's great. Good for you.
Ironically, I went back and worked for them years later. Isn't that so funny?
In years and years.
In Christine.
That was Warner Brothers Television. Not the same crew.
Not the same regime.
They were gone. Those executives.
Bye-bye.
Yeah. All right, so there you are. You're looking at these first four Seinfeld scripts in this smallish part, but you love Larry and you like Jerry.
Yes, and I didn't know stand-up and people in stand-up, and I got together and met with these guys, and I sort of recognized Jerry, and I remember he was actually eating cereal, and we read the scene together, and it felt good, and it felt very alternative, as you say.
Like a new thing.
Well, yes.
Yeah.
Because it was like guys that were sort of my age-ish, and they think this is funny, and it was not like your standard networky situation under any circumstances.
Yeah, it wasn't joke to joke, shallow characters necessarily. It was interesting.
It wasn't, set up punchline, right. Set up punch. Yeah. It was a little different.
And it was exciting?
Well, yeah, it was fun. And we made these four episodes, and I remember thinking, oh, this show's too smart and they're too stupid, they being the network, to pick this up. But then they did. I mean, they had made a pilot. I wasn't in it. Then they said, add a girl and we'll give you a four order. And then we made the four, and then they gave us a 13-episode order after that.
Right.
So it was our third season that we got our first full order.
And your character was based on Leifer, kind of.
Ish. I'm not sure it really was, but maybe a little
bit. And was she on staff at the beginning?
No, I don't think Carol was there in the very beginning.
Right, right. Is there weirdness? Was there weirdness around?
Oh, God, no.
Oh, good.
Oh, no.
She's pretty great.
Oh, yeah, she's great. No, there's no weirdness whatsoever.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
So none of you had any idea that it would change the history of entertainment, though, obviously.
No, didn't know that.
And you didn't think it was even going to last, necessarily. And it did struggle after the first year, right?
It struggled for a couple years. Yeah. Because we had sort of a crappy time slot. I'm pretty sure it was Jake and the Fat Man was beating us, and then Home Improvement.
I don't even remember what Jake and the Fat Man is anymore.
I don't either. Is it a sitcom?
I don't know.
I think it was a sitcom, or it's like a sort of a Rye Hour show.
Oh, God.
I don't really know.
Yeah.
Anyway. It's a long time ago.
Is it? It is,
Doesn't
right?
Doesn't it feel like it to you?
I don't know.
Were you here?
No, I was sweating and probably in New York somewhere. I wasn't here. I felt like I missed everything. I've watched Seinfeld, obviously, but I don't know every episode.
I don't either. It's out of my head.
Right?
No, come on.
I know, because when you do a show, when you actually are shooting a show, like when you're done shooting, it's like, all right, enough. It just goes away, kind of, doesn't it?
Oh, I have to clear it. I mean, it's like, what's that called when you clear in a computer?
Erase the
hard drive or whatever?
Yeah.
That's what I have to do.
Right. You intentionally do it, or it doesn't just happen?
It just happens.
Right. It's the weirdest thing. Like, I just got done shooting season four of the little show that I do, and I'm like, did that even happen? Because the work is so intense. It's like you're talking about with Veep. Like, you're exhausted. And then you go into like a post-traumatic stress almost. And you do all the press for it. And then by the time it's on, you're like, I can't fucking watch it.
Yeah.
Let me know how it is.
Yeah. But you watch it, don't you? I mean.
Eventually.
Do you edit your show
and
stuff? Yeah.
So you see it in all those different manifestations, and you see the director's cut, and you're like, oh, we're in trouble.
Right.
And then you're like, wait, we are going to edit it. And you're like, oh, that's a little better.
Oh, I know.
All right, so wait, after Seinfeld, was there panic? Like career-wise? Because one of the amazing things, I stated at the beginning, is that you have you've had a beautiful show business career, and you've brought humor and your skill set to everything you do, and you weren't really burdened, seemingly to me, one way or somehow or another. Like, by the time you did New Adventures of Old Christine, I didn't watch it and go like, nah, it's not Seinfeld, or that's the girl from Seinfeld, or any of that shit.
Right.
I mean, you're your own thing. But I've always felt that about you. I don't know if you think that about you.
I don't know how I think about that.
Knowing how TV worked and knowing what you'd been through, and even though you had done all right for yourself and stashed some cash, were you concerned about your career?
No, I wasn't. Because I also had two babies during this time.
Yeah.
When I was on Seinfeld. So I was... You know those fish who can whose eyes operate independently?
Yeah.
I was that.
Right.
I had one eye over there and my other eye was there.
Kids, show business. Right.
And then Seinfeld ended and both eyes went over into one
kids.
Direction. Yeah.
Which was good.
Which was great.
How and old I, were they when they when the show ended?
Five and
yeah.
one.
Oh, okay. So you were able to focus.
Yeah. And it was because it was very challenging to, do you have kids?
No.
Challenging to balance the.
Sure.
Having those boys and going to work.
And you did you not necessarily want to be one of those people that just hired somebody to manage your children forever?
No, that's not in my makeup. But yeah. I mean, but by the way, yeah. I don't disparage people who do that. And I also have a woman still who I work with to this day who is on board, who helped us in our house.
It was sure.
the most kind and giving person.
But you wanted to have a relationship with your children.
I was having children not just to like have them and
right.
look at them from afar.
Right.
To like to engage with them.
Right.
So.
Did you grow up with that?
Grow up with what?
Engaged parents?
Yes, I did.
That's nice.
Yes, very yeah. engaged. So I had another focus.
Right. And so show business was secondary in a way.
Yeah. I mean, it was very, I don't mean to say it's not important to me, but it was definitely not the most important.
Right. And when did, so now do you find that, because you did other stuff.
I did a series for NBC a couple years later called Watching Ellie, which was really good and got canceled after two seasons, which was heartbreaking. But I think it was a foray into my new sort of kind of life as a producer and being in a show and producing it and getting into, you know.
Is that something you were guided into or you decided to do?
No, it just felt correct.
That
you know,
you knew you could do that. You had enough juice and you had, yeah,
totally.
And you enjoyed it producing?
I do, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. I can't imagine not doing it.
Right.
Yeah.
That anything you do now, you have to have that position.
I think so, yeah.
So you have some control and.
I have some control and I bring experience that is useful to the product.
Have you thought about producing other shit?
Yes. I'm developing a couple of things right now.
Yeah?
Yeah. I'm developing a limited series at HBO about based on a book written by Helen Thorpe called Soldier Girls, which is about three generations of women from Indiana who were in the National Guard and then got deployed to Afghanistan and Iraq.
Wow.
And then...
That's documentary or fictionalized?
It will be fictionalized.
Uh-huh.
And then... And then the other thing is that I'm developing at Fox Searchlight this movie called Force Majeure. It's a film that came out a couple years ago, Swedish film.
Oh, okay.
And so we're developing that over there. So those are my two projects right now.
Well, that's exciting.
Yeah. We'll see. What are you eating, Tums?
No, nicotine lozenges.
Oh. How long have you not smoked?
Over a decade.
How often do you eat those?
A lot.
You and Matt Walsh.
Does he do it too?
Yeah, except he's trying to get off of it.
Is he on the gum or the lozenges?
He was on the gum. Then he tried to get off of it. And when we were working together very recently, he was into lollipops. I don't know where he stands today, but he got a bag of lollipops.
It's a tough one to kick, the nicotine.
Yeah.
It feels good.
Well, so then don't kick it.
Yeah, that's where I'm at. It's been 10 years on these dumb things.
Is it bad for you, do you think?
Probably somehow, but not as bad as smoking. And I don't think it's that bad.
So who cares?
Exactly. All right, so good. We're almost
almost through this bullshit.
No, it's not. I'm being just a little. I'm projecting that you want to be done with it.
No. It's fine.
Did
it's
a lot of voiceover
great.
Work. You did Arrested Development. A few episodes of that. That's fun, right?
That was really fun.
Is that where you met Tony?
Tony. Well, here's the thing. Both of us have no memory of meeting each other. And in fact, we were asked in an interview once, did we ever work together? And we said, well, we were on the same show, but we never worked together. And then, like, 2 years later, somebody sends a still, and we actually had a scene together, and neither of us remembered. So, talk about erasing a hard drive.
He's a very unique comic thing.
Oh, I'll say. He's somebody you should have in here.
Yeah, I'd like to.
Yeah, you should.
Is he a good talker?
Yeah. Totally. He's really interesting, and he's a very nice man.
He seems interesting.
Yeah.
What, like, when you work with somebody like that, because he seems very in it, at all times and very like is like I don't know what how what's his acting style. I mean, how does he prepare? What is it about him? I mean, I know it's a vague question.
I don't know. But
you do so many scenes with him, and he's so specifically, you know, like your shadow. And
I think we feel very much like dance partners.
Oh yeah,
yeah. Very in sync with one another.
Was that right away or did that evolve?
Almost right away. I could tell right away that was going to work.
Uh-huh.
I knew it. Yeah.
It's a great character, that guy.
Incredible, right?
Yes.
Somebody, a friend of mine who's an actor, likened it to a vine that's growing on a trellis.
the relationship?
Yeah.
That's very good.
Yeah.
Now, and you did that sketch for Amy's show, Schumer. And
yeah.
And you're supportive of young, funny ladies. Do you find,
yes,
in general?
If I'm supportive? Yes, I am supportive. I love funny ladies.
Right? There needs to be more.
Yeah, I love funny women.
Who, like outside, have you seen Maria Bamford? Do you know her?
No.
You should know her.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
What is she? Is she an actress or a stand-up?
She's a stand-up, but she's a unique kind of savant-like stand-up. She just did a show of her own with Mitchell Hurwitz.
Excuse me. I know who she is. She did the show in her house for
her
parents.
Yes, yes, yes.
I think she's unbelievable.
Right?
Sorry, I didn't know her name.
Yeah, that's her name.
I think she's unbelievable.
Oh, good. And do you, I guess it's sort of a question I always wonder about. Like, do you socialize with Jerry and Larry? And
not really.
Isn't that weird?
Does
it strike you as odd? How about Jason?
No, not very much.
This is the saddest thing I've learned about show business over the 700 episodes, is that like as a fan of things, you like part of you thinks like, no, they hang out. They know.
Do you hang out with people you work
with? I do
not. Anybody?
Not really.
Who are your closest friends?
At this point, longstanding, a guy who's a writer up in San Francisco, not a show business guy.
Right.
The novelist Sam Lipsight is a very good friend of mine. I got a friend, old friend of mine who's actually works in politics. He worked for Clinton and Obama. He's like a hardcore political guy, Jim Loftus. My girlfriend's a painter.
Neat.
Yeah. And
does she do? Oils?
She doesn't work in oils. She does big abstracts. And she's a real deal painter. Like she sells paintings and stuff. I'm not sure what the base, it's definitely not oils. She works in water-based paints,
mm-hmm.
Big canvases.
Oh, that's so cool. I would love to do that.
Yeah?
No, not professionally, my God.
But have you painted?
Not in any way that I would ever say.
What are your hobbies then? I don't have any either.
Difficult
question. I didn't mean it to be challenging.
I hike.
Yeah.
Is that a hobby?
Sure.
Okay, I hike.
Do you like listening to music and stuff?
Can I tell you something?
Do we have to erase the whole thing?
No.
Oh.
The thing about music that I am so irritated with, and you're probably, you've got all these contraptions everywhere. I really miss putting a thing in and then just listening to it.
Yeah.
Now I've got to go find Spotify or this or fuck turd that. I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
And then I've got to figure out how to turn it on in the house. I am, I actually have to change my life in this area because I don't listen to enough music.
I just bought a record player. I'm playing records.
Right. Whatever happened to that?
It's back.
I know it's back, but it's back in a retro way.
I guess.
Or is it really back?
You can buy records.
No, I know you can, but I mean, in other words, are people now really back to listening to records?
A lot of people are. I mean, I know it seems like a fashion, but it actually does sound funny. It sounds really good, records, and there's also the ritual of it that we grew up with. There's still the act of playing records. I mean, whether one thing that could happen, if you went and bought a record player, you know, within a week, I'm just judging, you know, from what I know of you, you could get to a point where it's like, what the fuck am I doing with records?
Yeah, I could see that happening. I could.
What was I thinking?
Yes.
Just show me how to do Spotify.
Yeah. All right, now I'll learn Spotify. Exactly.
But you know, you can load up your iPod, right? Or your phone? Or your kids.
I gotta tell you something. I know, but I'm so proud of myself that I got your goddamn podcast on my thing.
Yeah.
I have this thing called My Podcasts,
which is
like TiVo for podcasts.
Right, yeah.
It's fantastic.
Oh, good. You know what the problem you're talking about is?
No.
Getting old.
Eh?
Yeah, yeah. Grandma doesn't know how to work her thing. Someone show her how to work her phone.
I know it is probably getting old, but I'm also, and also there's irritation that goes along with it, which is also getting old.
I have no patience, but I never have. Like if I can't do it pretty quickly, it's probably not going to get done.
Okay.
You? Well, not like comedy or that kind of stuff, but things like, you know, like I have to learn how to use this new recorder and it's like, it's a nightmare. Like it's a nightmare. Like I barely know how to do what I'm doing to record this. All I know how to do with what I'm doing is how to record us.
Well, actually, that's great. That's a feather in your cap.
Yeah.
I mean, you knew how to do this with the channel to turn you down in my ears and
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, I can figure shit out. You know, I'm a smart guy, but I don't have patience.
Yeah, I don't either. I don't have any patience for that kind of crap. I find it mind-numbingly dull.
Yeah, yeah. It's dull, but it's also frustrating because part of you things like I should be able to do this. You know how you learn how to do shit? When you have to. That's when you learn.
Right.
You can't just decide, like, I'm going to spend the day and maybe learn how to do this. You can't learn how to do something.
Until you're backed up against the wall.
Right, and you have to call somebody. Could you just fucking come over here and show me how to do what I need to do?
Yeah.
And then they show you and you know.
Or you have to figure it out for yourself and you're up against the wall. That also...
Right, but that's harder with technological stuff.
Right.
And then if you have a certain amount of money, you just hire a guy to...
Right, and they rip you off and it doesn't work.
Right, but you at least have Spotify on your thing. So what happens now? Now it's all, everything's in the can, the show's starting, and you're going to do press.
Yeah.
And then...
Like this. This is considered press now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Why do you say that in like, can you believe it?
It's a podcast. Podcasts are press.
I know, but it's good.
Yeah, it's great.
It's not...
That's why I'm here.
How far did you have to travel? What area do you live in?
I live on the west side. It was a bit of...
Oh, my
but
God.
But actually, I came from Universal.
So that was easy.
So it wasn't that bad.
And going home is not going to be bad. It's only 125.
It's fine. I'm not complaining.
Do you exercise?
Yes, a lot.
Yeah. Oh, so
do you?
I have been a bit, working out a bit, and sometimes I run.
Oh, really? I run too.
Yeah, you're a runner.
Yeah, a little bit. I
outside,
used to run
inside?
More. Both.
Yeah?
Yeah?
I like outside.
Outside's nice.
Yeah.
I like hiking. This is the thing that I really adore,
yeah.
Actually.
So I think we're good. Do you feel good about it?
Sure. Do you?
I do.
Good.
I like the show. I like you. I think we covered
think
a lot of things.
You're great.
I just don't like. I want to make sure that we didn't leave some amazing story unturned.
Oh, I'm sure we did, but then I'll come back.
Yeah, you
I
will.
Guess so sure, why not? I like coming here. It's nice to talk to you. This is unusual.
Oh yeah. Well, this is one other thing. This is like you know, I didn't know who you were, and there's this like this lineage that you have. That tracks back to French Jews.
Yeah.
Which I found was very exciting. So I made this assumption about you, not knowing you at all, that you were part of this amazing old aristocratic Jewish family. And that's the way you lived. And you spoke French. I had made all these assumptions about you.
No, I don't speak French. Huh? I do have a French background. And it's true. My family. In fact, my grandfather, who was a fairly mean guy, but whatever, he died at the age of 103.
Yeah.
A couple years ago.
Oh, really?
Rest in peace. Yes. And he funded the Free French Air Fleet in World War II and worked for the resistance. And he was a Baltic gunner and all that
right,
kind of stuff.
Right. Dreyfus is a famous French Jewish family.
Right.
Like they did good things and they were like, no?
Well, I don't know how good.
Well, maybe it's
well,
just.
Well, that was a good thing. What he did was a good thing during World War II.
Right.
God knows.
Right.
That was a cool thing that he did.
And is there elements of your family that still operate in that business, like whatever that business was, whatever?
I wonder if anybody's, yes, distant relatives.
Yeah.
Distant, yeah, in France, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
And you never track them down to find, you know.
I don't see a lot of that side of my family, to tell you the truth. Yeah, we're sort of.
Estranged?
I don't know if it's estranged, as it's just, we just sort of. Are not in touch.
Your father's side.
Correct. My dad sort of has, I think, made an effort to kind of
separate
out. Yeah.
Do you know why?
It's a lot of, yes, but that's another podcast.
But do you have a relationship with him?
With my dad?
Yeah.
Oh, yes, definitely. I'm very close to my dad, yeah.
And your stepdad too?
Yes.
That's nice. You got two dads.
I got two dads. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they both walked me down the aisle when I got married.
They did?
Yeah, it's nice.
Are you Jewy?
No. Mm-mm. I'm not. Are you?
I think culturally, yeah. I mean, I'm not ashamed of it. I'm okay with it.
I didn't ask if you were ashamed.
Well, it's just you hit a button. I don't do as much as I should. My brother got kind of Jewy, and it wanes in and out. And I was brought up conservative Jew. I don't go on holidays. I don't fast on Yom Kippur, but I talk a lot about Jews, and like I identify with Jews.
Right.
Don't you?
Yes. I mean, I do and I don't. I was not raised Jewish.
No.
Anyway, no. My mother's not Jewish.
Okay.
And my father's only half Jewish.
Oh, really?
Yes. His mother was Catholic and his father was Jewish.
Huh.
And, but.
So it wasn't laid on you.
It wasn't laid on me, but in a way it could, might as well have been because people just assume it, you know?
Right.
I sort of look as if I'm Jewish and I have a Jewish last name and,
right.
you know, stuff like that. But so, and also from, you know, there's an aspect of it I think I've sort of, I am.
Well, yeah, you're on Seinfeld.
Yeah, I was on Seinfeld. Yeah.
That's more Jewy than most people.
Yeah. Yeah, by osmosis. That's exactly right.
All right. Thanks for talking.
Thank you so much. This is really fun.
I love her. That was a perfect guest for part one of our 700th episode. She's amazing. I hope you enjoyed that. And now I'm excited to tell you that you should now go, if you haven't already, and download part two of our 700th episode, which is my conversation with Louis C.K. about where Horace and Pete came from. It was pretty focused, but it was pretty intense, and Louis was excited to talk about it. Always go to WTFpod.com for all your WTF Pod needs and know that it's powered by Squarespace. Beautiful. Go there. Sign up for the newsletter. Check out the merch. Do get the howl. Do whatever you do. So I'll talk to you in a minute on part two of our 700th episode with Louis C.K. Hey, folks, this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. You know all those times you've heard guests sneeze on the show? Well, actually, you don't hear any of that because we cut the sneezes out when we're editing. But take my word for it, people definitely sneeze in here, and when they do, I've got a box of Kleenex on the table right in front of them so they can use one and get right back to business. And here's what Kleenex means to me: a tissue that will hold up. We've all used those other tissues that you blow holes right through. When I see Kleenex, I know that tissue is up for the job. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.